Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare! All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up.
Hello.
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 Yay.
When we used to record in the same booth, we would say hi to you instead of hi to each other, but now we say hi to each other first. So let us say hello to you. Hi, I'm Erin.
Hi, I'm Diana. And I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, and this is, episode 50 of the entire thing, right? No, 51 of the entire thing, because the Frost Fair won.
Right.
Right.
True. Season 2, episode 51.
Yeah,
Ricardus. As he is known.
And this is going to be the end of season 2.
Yeah, almost.
So we go to season 3 when we're done with Ricardus.
Yeah, one more episode. Next week is Drunk Shakespeare, Erin.
Oh, boy. What are we going to drink, Diana?
Yeah,
what do the Yorks drink? What do they drink in Yorkshire? Yorkshire.
Goat piss. I have no idea. In Yorkshire, they probably drink Guinness or, you know,
Yorkshire.
Pints of stout.
Stout? I don't like stout. All right, we need to do a little research. Hold on. I'm going to the usual while I'm on with you guys. What do they drink? What?
Cut this part out?
Oops, no. What do they drink in Yorkshire? Gin to wine, coffee to cider. There's a wealth of alcoholic and non-alcoholic options being produced throughout Yorkshire.
Well, gin is a big drink in England.
Yeah, Yorkshire gin. Artisan gin. Well, you don't want me on gin. You don't want me on gin. That would be bad. So I guess I'll do cider then.
Okay.
Because nobody wants me on gin.
I don't know. Maybe.
No. No.
No.
It's bad. Okay.
But today, we have some fun in store for you.
Yeah.
Ghosts.
Oob.
Boob.
And we have a split screen.
Yeah, almost like you and me. We could be Richard.
Almost like
Richard.
You and me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So these are the pre-battle scenes. And we're going to meet, we met Richmond, but we're going to see him again as a battle commander here. And both Richard and Richmond have these scenes where they're going into their tent and meeting with their guys and talking about what's going to happen tomorrow in the battle. And they're all in the same scene. Supposedly. So that's an interesting thing to consider if you're doing the play or if you're trying to imagine the play. What does that look like? Are they both on the same stage? Is there like two different pieces of the stage? Is one above and one below? How would you do it?
Are you asking me for real? Are you asking
you, Erin? How would you do it?
Me? How would I do it? I would have... them come in from different sides of the stage and have that. And you might even weave the lines. Ooh, you could have some fun weaving lines. I mean, you'd be taking them out of order. But as long as you keep the rhythm, what would be the harm in weaving them?
Yeah, and in fact, the rhythm is weird because there's a lot of half lines. Mm. We'll see. As you know, they're barking out. Well, especially Richard is barking out, you know, hey, who's there? Are you there? Oh, you do this thing. You know, he seems, you get the a sense that he's really agitated and nervous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Richmond's language is much more even. He's like, sure, I'm just, in fact, at one point he says, I'm just going to go take a nap.
Yes, I remember that.
I'm like, what?
Well, he wants to be well rested.
Right. So he's like...
But also his army is smaller than Richard's by quite a bit.
Yeah, by half. Yeah. So, you know, the text belies the actual scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah. Richard says in his lines, oh, our battle is triple theirs, but it's actually double. So his battalions were about 10 to 12,000 and Richmond's were 5 to 6,000, depending on who's reporting and such. And this is taking place on Bosworth Field. Where's that?
Wait, is that the car park?
Yeah, it's near Leicester. Yeah, it's near Leicester, which is spelled Leicester. Leicester. It's in the middle of the country. It's kind of northwest of London. And that's because if you look at a map of England, Richmond landed, as we said last episode, in the southwest, like at the tip of Wales at the bottom there. And he kind of marched up the whole border of Wales so that he could collect guys on his way up, you know, for the army.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have many. He had French mercenaries. He had, you know, like some various scattered smaller lords with their forces. And then Oxford. Oxford was like his big, you know.
And Dorset.
Yeah, and Dorset. Yeah. But Dorset was Elizabeth Woodville's son. Like, he doesn't command a lot of people.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Yeah. His name was rallied people, right?
Right.
And then there were the Stanleys. Stanley, Earl of Derby.
Oh, poor Lord Stanley.
Yeah. They were key players who then played really mean, you know? They said they were supporting Richard, but they did that. Like, you see this in film sometimes, like where the main army is here, and then there's some guys who are sitting over on the hill, and you're like, what are they going to do? And that's the idea, is like, you don't know what they're going to do. The Stanleys were those guys on the hill that were supposed to be supporting Richard, but they were watching to see how the battle went and then charged down on Richmond's side, you know? Then supported him. And it was like, they only did that after they knew for sure that, because Northumberland defected out of the battle, left Richard in the dust, and then Richard made this crazy charge. I was reading all up on the Battle of Bosworth. He made this crazy charge through the middle, thinking like, I'm just going to fucking kill Richmond, and then the whole thing's over. And it was a desperate, crazy charge, and Oxford cut him off, and Oxford's forces and the Stanleys surrounded him. And killed.
Well, it kind of makes sense that the Stanleys did what they did, because look, Richard threatened Lord
George.
Stanley.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And had George in
custody.
Imprisoned, right?
Yeah.
Like basically as ransom.
Well, yeah.
And also there was no winning, right? There was nothing that Lord Stanley could do that would be acceptable, because his wife wants him to back Richmond and the king wants him to back the Yorks, and there's no winning.
Yeah, for sure.
So they had to,
bad place.
They had to sit up on that hill and wait to see which way it went so they could align themselves with whoever the victor was, because otherwise they were fucked.
Yeah. But apparently this is also something that they did always.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it
Which
actually,
is how he ended up married to Margaret Beaufort in the first
probably,
place.
Probably, yeah. But yeah. It actually apparently earned them the extreme loyalty of their men, their followers, because their men knew that they wouldn't take them needlessly into a stupid battle where they would die.
Nice.
Yeah. So because they knew the Stanleys to be very discerning in terms of like, we're going to wait and see. Is this really a winning thing or not a winning thing? And if it's not a winning thing, we're out of here. You know?
Yeah.
So they actually, their forces were very, very extremely loyal and very hard fighting, you know, like did their job when it came to do it, because they knew that their commanders were, you know, to be trusted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. And then so we have some various strategizing. We do see Stanley visit Richmond secretly over enemy lines. And then both commanders go to sleep. And that's when all the dead people come walking through. Yeah. And this is another really interesting thing, like how to stage this. There are no exits, you'll notice. The ghosts all come in and supposedly all stay until there's one stage direction that says they vanish. It's like, oh, uh-huh, sure. They just go swooped up to the rafters, no problem. But yeah, that's an interesting one to stage and figure out. They all speak to Richard first and curse him, and then they speak to Richmond. So, you know, again, there's sort of that division feeling of like there's one guy on one side and one guy on the other side for the ghost to talk to you too. So yeah. And then different editions divide up this whole thing differently, because some editions make from Act 5, Scene 3 go through to the end of the play without a scene change. Mm. Even though you'll see at the end of the section that we're choosing to do, it says exeunt. That's everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, different choices. Different choices.
Editors.
Yep.
Speaking of which.
Speaking of which.
Note, you have a note here.
Yes.
About Richard's waking speech and editors.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and editors. There's this crazy speech where when Richard wakes up from the nightmare of the ghosts, he has a monologue, a soliloquy all by himself in his tent. And it's, you'll hear it. When you hear it, it sounds odd. It's very chopped up. It's not, you know, and so that could be deliberate. Like, he's just had a nightmare and it's horrifying, right? But it's also a seeking for sympathy kind of a speech. So is it a last moment of, you know, Shakespeare going, but Richard, you know?
Or maybe after Shakespeare's death, his friends threw it in, you know, because they were like,
Richard deserves one more speech.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So it has the flavor of maybe this is not Shakespeare. And so some editors leave it out, actually, which is interesting because it's like, what happens then after the ghost scene? We can talk about it some more after we read it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So should we, can I read Richard till the end?
Yes,
here?
Please.
Yeah. And then you be Richmond. You'll be the good guy. And then ghosts, we can just go every other.
Okay.
I'll do one, you do one, I'll do one, you do one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Be Norfolk. Be my buddy.
Okay.
Okay.
And Surrey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So Act 5, Scene 3, Bosworth Field. Entered King Richard in arms with Norfolk, Surrey, and others. Richard, here pitch our tents, even here in Bosworth Field. My lord of Surrey, why look you so sad?
My heart is 10 times lighter than my looks.
My lord of... Yeah. It's like, don't worry. I feel
I'm
good.
Okay.
I'm good. Yeah, and putting the words Bosworth Field right in the beginning there, every member of the Elizabethan audience would have been like, aha! This is the end
now
of the play.
Now we know what's happening.
Right. We know this story. Yes. And then he turns to his buddy, my lord of Norfolk.
Here, most gracious liege.
Norfolk, we must have Knox, huh? Must we not?
We must both give and take, my gracious lord.
Yeah, he's like, there are going to be good days and bad days. And Norfolk's like, yeah, we'll give him a few. Don't worry. Richard. Up with my tent there. Here will I lie tonight. But where tomorrow? Well, all's one for that. Who hath decried the number of the foe?
Do you think he means, I don't know if I'll be dead tomorrow?
Yeah.
When he says, but where tomorrow?
Yeah. But I think, you know, every soldier thinks that on the eve of battle, right?
Yeah.
They must.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, back then, we have multiple examples of that in the plays. Henry V, they have that whole scene before Agincourt where they're all sitting around the fires and they're like, who knows what tomorrow brings, especially when they're outnumbered. I mean, here, Richard has the advantage, so you'd think it shouldn't be that dire for him. He's a practiced soldier. What is Richmond?
He's not sure, obviously.
Yeah.
And Norfolk, 6,000 or 7,000 is their utmost power.
Richard, why our battalion troubles that account? Besides, the king's name is a tower of strength, which they upon the adverse party want. So, who hath decried? Decried just means sussed out. And 6,000 or 7,000, and we have, he says triple, but historically it was double. And they don't have the king on their side. So here.
King and God.
Yeah. God chose me, if you believe that stuff. Up with my tent there. Valiant gentlemen, let us survey the vantage of the field. Call for some men of sound direction. Let's want no discipline. Make no delay. For lords, tomorrow is a busy day.
Okay, but I have a question.
Yes.
He says, up with my tent there. Here will I lie tonight, but where tomorrow? And then later on, he says, up with my tent there. Are they not putting up his fucking tent? Are they standing around? Like, why would the king have to say it twice?
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
There's something in that.
There's some uncertainty, you know? It feels like, people. Well, he says, here, pitch our tent. Oh, yeah, and he says, up with my tent there twice. You're right. Yeah.
So why? Why would he have to tell them twice if he says it once? Well, even if he says, like, look, here's where we're going to pitch this is where we're going to put our camp, right here in Bosworth Field, right?
Yeah.
Fine. Shouldn't they automatically start setting up the fucking tents? But then he says, okay, wait, I want my tent here.
Yeah.
Well, he says there, but.
There. Here will I lie tonight. Yeah.
Right. But where tomorrow? And then he says it again. I don't know. I don't know what I think about that. Are they not? Are they just standing around looking at the field and they need to be told multiple times?
Yeah, I guess we could get that sense that, like, people are not obeying Richard now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Feels weird.
And yet he has two of his best friends there, Surrey and Norfolk. But they're high lords.
They wouldn't be putting up the tents.
They wouldn't be putting up the tents. Yeah.
Their tents are being put up.
Indeed.
All right. Anyway, so then we go to the other side, and here's Richmond.
Well, he says, call for some men of sound direction. So, like, I need some people to advise me on this battle. Right?
Right.
Yeah. And then he's got the rhyming couplet. And so it says exeunt, which should be the end of a scene, but there's not a scene marker in this one.
Right.
Enter on the other side of the field, Richmond, Sir William Brandon, Oxford, and others. Some of the soldiers pitch Richmond's tent. So it's like Richmond doesn't have to call for his tent to be pitched.
Right. They just fucking put it up.
Yeah.
We're supposed to make something of that. I have to think about that. Mm. That might be a paper idea. Or an essay. Not a paper. Not a full paper. But an essay.
Yeah.
Like, why does Richard have to say it three times? And why does Richmond not have to say it at all?
Yes.
Okay. Richmond. The weary sun hath made a golden set, and by the bright track of his fiery car gives signal of a goodly day tomorrow.
Okay, so he's bringing in the god Apollo and his chariot, right? His fiery car. Apollo is symbolic of clarity, so it feels like, there's an open way forward for this army. And tomorrow's going to be a good day.
Right, obviously. Sir William Brandon, you shall bear my standard. Give me some ink and paper in my tent. I'll draw the form and model of our battle. Limit each leader to his several charge, and part in just proportion our small strength. So he's like, I don't know why he picks Brandon to bear his standard, but it's an honor, right?
Must have been historically accurate, probably, yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of historical accuracies in this last thing, in terms of names.
So let's sit down and let's write, I'll draw out how the battle's going to happen. And I'm going to tell each leader what he should be doing. And we'll just, we'll divide up so that we are, making the best of our small numbers.
Yeah. Our small strength. He's acknowledging that ours is smaller, obviously. But I think that an Elizabethan audience would listen to this and hear Henry V.
Oh, yeah.
They will hear Henry V, who's his great grand, great grand, great great, yeah. Yeah, or related to, not grandfather, but yeah. And Henry was like way outnumbered by the French in Agincourt and yet won, right? So
yes.
Small strength doesn't mean anything.
My Lord of Oxford, you, Sir William Brandon, and you, Sir Walter Herbert, stay with me.
The same with mentioning these names. Like, you know, for the contemporary audience, these all would have meant something, and these all would have had a story behind them, especially
which
Oxford.
They would know.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you, Sir Walter Herbert, stay with me. The Earl of Pembroke keeps his regiment. Good Captain Blunt, bear my good night to him, and by the second hour in the morning, desire the Earl to see me in my tent. Stays with is keeps.
Keeps. He keeps his regiment. So Pembroke didn't come to this meeting. He won't be here. He's over there. Because they're probably, you know, half a mile away from each other, all these big, giant armies.
And so, Blunt, could you just go tell him I said good night and I'll see him?
In the morning.
I'll see him in the morning. Yet one more thing, good Blunt, before thou goest. Where is Lord Stanley quartered? Dost thou know?
This is Blunt. Unless I have mistaken his colors much, which, well, I am assured I have not done, his regiment lies half a mile at least south from the mighty power of the king. Yeah, so he just said that, half a mile. I was not pulling that out of my ass anywhere. Yeah. So the Stanleys are half a mile away up on that hill over there. Okay.
Right.
And they can see them from there.
Well, everyone can see them from there.
Yeah.
Right? Can't Richard's army see them from there too?
Yep. They can all see each other. They know exactly how many people, who have descried the army, right? Decried the army. They know exactly, they can count them practically from where they are, you know?
Yeah.
Because each tent equals so many people and Yep.
Yeah.
So that's the thing about, you know, medieval warfare, early modern warfare is like, it was much more right in your face. There weren't so many, there were unknowns. Okay. Yes. But a lot of things were very obvious. So you could make your strategies because there was
a certain format.
Yeah. The armies approached each other. They saw each other. And then there was a call to, okay, charge, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
There were rules. Yeah. Okay. If without peril it be possible, good Captain Blunt, bear my good night to him and give him from me this most needful scroll. So if you can get up there without being seen, Blunt, you can tell him I said goodnight and here, give him this note. Slip him this note.
Yeah. And Blunt is like, yeah, man, I can do that. Cross enemy lines, no problem. Upon my life, my lord, I'll undertake it. And so, God give you quiet rest tonight.
Good night, good Captain Blunt. Come, gentlemen. Let us consult upon tomorrow's business. Into my tent. The air is raw and cold.
And then there's a stage direction. They withdraw into the tent. Well, yeah, that's what he said to do. We don't need your silly words, you silly editor. Okay. And then Richard is back. Richard Norfolk, this time with Ratcliffe and Catesby and others. Okay, Richard.
Wait, so who do you want to read? Because, I mean, you're reading Richard, but do you want to be the rat or the cat?
I think the rat doesn't talk here. He talks later. Oh, yeah, he does a little bit. I'll be the rat.
Okay, I'll be the cat.
Richard, what is the clock?
It's supper time, my lord. It's 9 o'clock. That's Catesby.
I will not sup. Yeah, it's Catesby. He's from the Bronx. The Bronx, England. Bronx, England. Richard, I will not sup tonight. Give me some ink and paper. What? Is my beaver easier than it was?
What?
This is a line that I always cut because it's like, I can't say that without cracking up. Come on. My beaver.
What is a beaver, please?
It is a face guard on the helmet. So it must have been sort of rusty and they must have fixed it, you know, like, it's yeah. But it's like, what? What
do
is
you
he
think,
talking about?
Do you think maybe is that why... Is that why vulvas are referred to as beavers?
Because the covering on the front?
That's what I'm wondering. The covering on the front.
Okay, maybe.
I wonder where that came from, that slang for pudenda.
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 Maybe because it's a small furry beast. Beavers aren't that small, but...
No, they're not. And they have big gnashing teeth. Yes. That's a Monty Python skit right there.
And so this is why you come to this podcast. Beaver is not related to the opening and closing of the front of a helm, as I thought it might be. Instead, in the early 1900s in Britain, beards became referred to as beavers, or men who had beards were beavers, and beards were beaverages, which sounds an awful lot like beverages to me. But anyway, so by the 1920s, when everybody was wildly wacky, a game developed on the streets of London, particularly with college students, where if you saw a man walking down the street with a beard, you would scream, "Beaver." And if you saw that man before your friend, you got points, and whoever had the most points at the end of the walk, the other guy had to buy drinks. At least that's what they're saying. Then, after this became a very well-known fad to point at men and scream beaver, there were different kinds of beavers. If you saw a man with a white beard, it was a polar beaver. If you saw a member of the royal family, it was a royal beaver. So there's, you know, a lot of, and it was a lot of fun, but it also apparently caused people in England to cease having beards because they didn't like being pointed at and screamed at. And then in 1927, the following limerick got published in a collection of limericks. There was a young lady named Eva who filled up a bath to receive a. She took off her clothes from her head to her toes when a voice at the keyhole yelled, "Beaver!" So it's a play on that, right? A beard, pubic hair, whatever. But the other thing that I read that someone learned on a historical tour in Philadelphia was that in colonial times, it was thought that venereal diseases were transmitted by a prostitute's pubic hair. So the madams then required the prostitutes to shave their pubic hair. But that was not good for men. They didn't like that. They wanted their women with pubic hair. What a change, huh? And that's why merkins were created. Merkins, which are vulva wigs, were made out of beaver fur. I don't know. You decide.
Okay. My beaver and all my armor laid into my tent.
It is my liege, and all things are in readiness.
Good Norfolk, hie thee to the charge. Use careful watch. Choose trusty sentinels.
I go, my lord.
Yeah, I feel like he's afraid of spies. He's afraid of defectors. Richard, stir with the lark tomorrow, gentle Norfolk.
I warrant you, my lord.
Catesby.
My lord.
Send out a pursuivant at arms to Stanley's regiment. Bid him bring his power before sun rising, lest his son George fall into the blind cave of eternal night. Fill me a bowl of wine. Give me a watch. Saddle White Surrey for the field tomorrow. Look that my staves be sound and not too heavy. And then he's going to call Ratcliffe. But I want to go back over this. The pursuivant at arms was an attendant on a herald. So he's like a sub-herald. And he's like, send him over to Stanley and tell him, get his fucking army in gear or his boy is going to hell. The blind cave of eternal night.
I want to point out the antithesis between Richard sending someone to go see Stanley and Richmond sending someone to go see Stanley. What's contained in how they say to address Stanley.
Yeah.
How they're, you know, It's just interesting because it is an antithesis.
A very sort of long game one. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
For sure. So there's like love and honor coming from Richmond's side and threats coming from Richard's side. Poor right. Stanley up in his tent going, yikes. Right? And he's like, on a big fat bowl of wine. And give me a watch. Give me a guard. And then he mentions White Surrey, which his horse's name was Surrey, and historical accounts report him riding through the battle on a big white horse. So, you know, these were interesting little details that Shakespeare's pulling out of the historical accounts.
Yeah.
My staves are my lance staff. So they actually carried lances into battle. That was the first thing that they had. And they'd unseat somebody, and that was one guy down, at least.
Yes.
Great.
And they shouldn't be too heavy. They should be sturdy, but not heavy.
Yeah, because he has one arm that's not so useful. So he needs a sword arm, too. Ratcliffe, my lord. That's Ratcliffe. Yeah. Richard, sawest thou the melancholy Lord Northumberland? So melancholy Northumberland, as I just said earlier, and we're going to say again tomorrow, next week when we talk about the battle, he defects. And because there were a lot of things going on between him and Richard, where there were promises made and then promises broken, it's very much like Buckingham. And so melancholy, because he's a little grumpy about like everything that has not gone his way. And Ratcliffe. Thomas, the Earl of Surrey, and himself, much about cockshut time, from troop to troop, went through the army, cheering up the soldiers. Cockshut time. Somebody should use that in another.
But you know what it is, right? It means it means like when you
shut up the roosters.
Roosters, right? But
cockshut time. Thank you, Shakespeare. That was entertaining. So, Surrey and Northumberland went going through the tents, talking to the guys, you know, rousing them up. It's going to be great. We're going to kick their asses. Don't you worry. So, Richard. So, I am satisfied. Give me a bowl of wine. I have not that alacrity of spirit nor cheer of mind that I was wont to have. Set it down. Is ink and paper ready? Ratcliffe. It is, my lord. Richard. Bid my guard watch. Leave me. Ratcliffe, about the mid of night, come to my tent and help to arm me. Leave me, I say.
Twice he had to ask for his wine, too.
Yeah.
Twice for his tent, twice for his wine.
Twice for his ink and paper, and yeah.
And ha!
And his guard, if you think. Like he said, give me a watch. And then he says, bid my guard watch. Yeah, so he's feeling like things are not getting done properly.
And they're not getting done properly if he has to keep asking for it. The king says, I need wine. It should be there.
Yeah.
These people are not behaving correctly around the king.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, I don't like it one bit. Okay, enter Darby.
So you're Darby, right?
Okay, yes. So Stanley, Earl of Darby, and if you see him referenced as Darby, that's who he is. He's Richmond's stepfather. Darby. Fortune and victory, sit on thy helm.
All comfort that the dark night can afford be to thy person, noble father-in-law, stepfather.
Yeah.
Tell me, how fares our loving mother? And that's questionable right there. Loving mother,
mother. Yeah. And father-in-law.
Crazy
because,
mother.
You know, by law, they were legally married. So they use that term sometimes to also describe them. Yeah. And then he brings in another legal term, which is interesting. I by attorney, he says. So in lieu of her. Mm-hmm. But also he by attorney became her husband, right? They were legally bound. Yeah.
Right.
So Darby. I, by attorney, bless thee from thy mother, who prays continually for Richmond's good. So much for that. The silent hours steal on. Yeah, he's like, okay, enough about
her. Yeah, let's not talk about Margaret.
Yeah. She's been enough problem in my.
She's been praying my whole fucking time I've been married to her, and I'm done.
Yeah, here
we are, finally, and you're in battle, and I'm so goddamn thankful, because when you were a kid, let me tell you something, it was a pain in my ass.
I only ever had to hear about my boy, who's gonna be king. Oh, my God. Yeah, if you watch The White Queen, guys, which I strongly suggest, you'll see. She's fucking always on her knees, except when she's fucking Jasper Tudor, but you know, besides that.
Whole nother story. Yeah.
Whole nother story. Okay, so much for that. The silent hours steal on, and flaky darkness breaks within the east. So the east is breaking with streaks of light, flaky. In brief, for so the season bids us be, prepare thy battle early in the morning, and put thy fortune to the arbitrament of bloody strokes and mortal staring war. Arbitrament. His decision. So
is that like arbitrate?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fortune will decide. Arbitrament just means a decision. Fortune will decide with the bloody strokes of mortal staring war, staring down death. War is always looking death in the face. Yeah. That it will decide what goes on here. We don't have any more control. I, as I may, that which I would, I cannot, with best advantage will deceive the time and aid thee in this doubtful shock of arms. But on thy side I may not be too forward, lest being seen, thy brother, tender George, be executed in his father's sight. So he's just said what we had said before, which he can't really support Richmond in plain view, because otherwise George will be executed right there, right? It's kind of like, for those of you who saw Game of Thrones, the Battle of the Bastards, where he's got Rickon, right, you know, the fucking bastard of, what's his name, Bolton, has Rickon right in the battle, and Jon Snow should have, you know, held himself in check, but he couldn't help himself, and he just goes after him. So Stanley does help himself, right? He's like, nope, I am going to just hold the course and see what happens. This doubtful shock of arms is uncertain. I can't openly fight for you. Okay. Farewell. The leisure and the fearful time cuts off the ceremonious vows of love and ample interchange of sweet discourse, which so long sundered friends should dwell upon. God, give us leisure for these rites of love. Once more, adieu. Be valiant and speed well. So he has love as a line ending twice.
Yeah.
He really cares about this boy. So he says, so long sundered friends, we have been apart for much too long. We haven't seen each other in years, and I would spend more time talking to you and tell you all the things that have gone on, but I can't. I got to get back.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll be able to do this later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. God give us the chance, right?
Yeah. And Richmond, good lords, conduct him to his regiment. I'll strive with troubled thoughts to take a nap, lest leaden slumber
pies?
Lest leaden slumber pies me down tomorrow, when I should mount with wings of victory. Once more, good night, kind lords and gentlemen.
Yeah, so everybody leaves him. Pies means weigh me down. I don't know where it comes from. It's a weird word. Never seen it before. And then he has a prayer. He's all by himself, and he has a prayer. And if you read Henry V, which we absolutely need to do, you'll see that Henry makes almost the same prayer right before the morning of the battle.
O thou whose captain I account myself, look on my forces with a gracious eye. Put in their hands thy bruising irons of wrath, that they may crush down with a heavy fall the usurping helmets of our adversaries. Make us thy ministers of chastisement, that we may praise thee in victory. To thee I do commend my watchful soul, ere I let fall the windows of mine eyes. Sleeping and waking, oh, defend me still.
Nice. Yeah. So that's definitely a soldier's prayer. You know, like, use me to bash in the helmets of other people.
Yep.
Right.
For your glory.
For your glory. Okay. So we
have Richard. Because we are going to praise thee.
Yes. With blood and gore. So Richard has lain down after he has his whole bowl of wine. He's snoring away over on that side. And then Richmond is on this side. And here come the ghosts. All right. You want to be first or?
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is the ghost of Prince Edward.
It's Edward who was killed at Tewkesbury. It's Margaret's son. Yeah. So Lady Anne's first husband.
Okay, good.
That's
Edward, guy. Edward, Edward, and Edward.
I know. So many Edwards.
Henry, 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 and George, George, George.
Yes.
Okay. And Richard. Okay. Ghost of Prince Edward. Let me sit heavy on thy soul tomorrow. Think how thou stabbedst me in my prime of youth at Tewkesbury. Despair, therefore, and die. And then to Richmond.
To Richmond.
Be cheerful, Richmond, for the wronged souls of butchered princes fight in thy behalf. King Henry's issue, Richmond, comforts thee.
Good, nice. Yeah, so we don't even need the stage direction to Richmond because it says, be cheerful, Richmond. So we get that. And then it's going to be the same pattern for all the rest of them. They speak to Richard first, and then they speak to Richmond after. Interesting, the souls of butchered princes fight in thy behalf. I heard about a production at the RSC of the history plays, and the director chose to have every person who died still stand on stage as a dead person with blood on them, which, if you don't know the plays, must have been entirely confusing, because it's like, wait, why is that guy still there? I thought he died. But he chose to have all the ghosts still on stage, though they said nothing. But they were still among the crowd.
I kind of love that, but I think I would put like a hood in the back of their costume so that when they died, they pulled the hood up over and their faces were blanked out, but their bloodied self was still there.
Yeah, there you go. Some clue.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But in any case, they're fighting for Richmond here. So enter the ghost of King Henry VI, who was king before all this mess. When I was mortal, my anointed body by thee was punched full of deadly holes. Think on the tower and me, despair and die. Harry VI bids thee despair and die. Virtuous and holy, be thou conqueror. Harry, that prophesied thou shouldst be king, doth comfort thee in thy sleep. Live and flourish.
And here comes the ghost of Clarence. Let me sit heavy on thy soul tomorrow. I that was washed to death with fulsome wine, poor Clarence, by thy guile betrayed to death. Tomorrow in the battle, think on me, and fall thy edgeless sword, despair, and die. Thou offspring of the House of Lancaster, the wronged heirs of York do pray for thee. Good angels guard thy battle. Live and flourish.
Thou offspring of the House of Lancaster. Very, very tenuous line there. Yeah, actually, I read a little bit more about that. And Margaret Beaufort's line from John of Gaunt were actually bastards originally. Her line, she came from one of John of Gaunt's bastards, who were then declared legitimate later. But it's like, you know, it was a detail. You know, somebody's arbitrary decision that declared.
But there were no others, right? There were no other Lancasters,
right? The Lancastrians had been really decimated by this point, so hence Richmond was like, and various people supported him for different reasons. So they talk about him being in Brittany, and the Dukes of Brittany supported him because he said that he would help them provide, you know, strength against France, who was kept trying to take them over.
Yeah.
So various people supported him as, you know, because he promised them things. When I am king,
I shall.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So notice each of the ghosts reminds Richard of the terrible things that he did to them, and then has their own reasons for praying, you know, for praying for Richmond. Like, so the wronged heirs of York. So Clarence stood in line to be king behind Edward if, you know, he could.
If the children were dead, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you can imagine Richard over there tossing in his sleep. Ah, ghosts. Okay. Enter the ghosts of Rivers, Gray, and Vaughn. Should we trade them off or I'll do all of them?
Yeah, no. Do ghosts, you Rivers, Gray. I'll do Gray. You do Vaughn, and then we'll do it all together.
Great. Okay. Rivers. Let me sit heavy on thy soul tomorrow. Rivers that died at Pomfret, despair and die.
Think upon Gray and let thy soul despair.
Think upon Vaughn and with guilty fear let fall thy lance, despair and die. And then all of them speak to Richmond together.
Awake.
And think our wrongs
in Richard's bosom
will conquer him.
Awake and win the day.
Win the day.
Yeah. And here come the ghosts,
the two young princes. Yeah. So these are Edward and Richard who died in the tower. Yeah.
Or not.
Or not.
Or died someplace else.
Dream on thy cousins
smothered in the tower. Let us be led within thy bosom, Richard, and weigh thee down to ruin, shame, and death. Thy nephew's souls bid thee despair and die. Sleep, Richmond, sleep in peace and wake in joy. Good angels guard thee from the boar's annoy. Live and beget a happy race of kings. Edward's unhappy sons do bid thee flourish.
Yeah. So babies talk about babies, right? You go have some babies after this. That would be great. Mm-hmm. So here comes Hastings. Oh. Bloody and guilty, guiltily awake, and in a bloody battle end thy days. Think on Lord Hastings, despair and die. To Richmond. Quiet, untroubled soul, awake, awake, arm, fight, and conquer for fair England's sake.
And here comes the ghost of Lady Anne. Richard, thy wife, that wretched Anne, thy wife, that never slept a quiet hour with thee, now fills thy sleep with perturbations. Tomorrow in the battle think on me, and fall thy edgeless sword, despair and die. Thou quiet soul, sleep thou a quiet sleep, dream of success and happy victory. Thy adversary's wife doth pray for thee.
Yeah. Remember Anne talking about, I never get to sleep next to him because he always has these terrible nightmares. Well, now I'm your nightmare, bitch.
Now, she's the second one to bring up edgeless sword.
Yeah.
So your sword is dull. It should be dull.
Yeah. Remember, he asked for his lances to be good and solid and sturdy, right? So he didn't think about his sword, but they are thinking about that, yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody's saying despair and die. So the thing that's going to kill you is the feeling that you have before
despair.
The battle. Okay, and here comes Buckingham. He's the last guy. The first was I that helped thee to the crown. The last was I that felt thy tyranny. Oh, in the battle, think on Buckingham. And die in terror of thy guiltiness. Dream on of bloody deeds and death. Fainting, despair. Despairing, yield thy breath. Ooh, nice one, right?
That's so pretty.
It's beautiful, yeah. Dream on of bloody deeds. Go ahead, make your plans, have your ambitions. It's all going to lead to the same thing. Despair. So he has the double, despairing. Incredible, beautiful use of the word there, yeah. And then to Richmond. I died for hope ere I could lend thee aid. But cheer thy heart, and be thou not dismayed. God and good angels fight on Richmond's side, and Richard falls in height of all his pride.
So many rhyming couplets. Death, breath, yeah. Aid, dismayed, side, pride.
Yeah, triple. He's like, mic drop, baby. Right? Yeah. Yeah. And Richard falls in height of all his pride, like Lucifer.
Yes.
So if he just said God and the good angels, and then he talks about Richard in the height of his pride, he's comparing him to Lucifer.
Wow.
That's cool.
That's really
that
neat.
Troublesome stage direction. The ghosts vanish. Okay. And here's the speech. So see what you make of it. We'll talk about it when I'm done. This is Richard waking up with a start. Ah! Give me another horse! Bind up my wounds! Have mercy, Jesu! Soft! I did but dream. Oh, coward conscience! How dost thou afflict me? The lights burn blue. It is now dead midnight. Cold, fearful drops stand on my trembling flesh. What do I fear? Myself? There's none else by. Richard loves Richard. That is, I am I. Is there a murderer here? No. Yes, I am. Then fly. What? From myself? Great reason why. Lest I revenge. What? Myself upon myself? Alack, I love myself. Wherefore? For any good that I myself have done unto myself? Oh, no, alas, I rather hate myself for hateful deeds committed by myself. I am a villain, yet I lie. I am not. Fool of thyself, speak well. Fool, do not flatter. My conscience hath a thousand several tongues, and every tongue brings in a several tale, and every tale condemns me for a villain. Perjury, perjury in the highest degree. Murder, stern murder in the direst degree. All several sins, all used in each degree, throng to the bar, crying all guilty, guilty. I shall despair. There is no creature loves me, and if I die, no soul shall pity me. Nay, wherefore should they, since that I myself find in myself no pity to myself? Methought the souls of all that I had murdered came to my tent, and every one did threat tomorrow's vengeance on the head of Richard.
I think Shakespeare wrote it. I think Shakespeare wrote it, and I think it's gorgeous. And I think that someone who is filled with shame, someone who is filled with shame, and remember, shame is different than guilt. Guilt is, I did a bad thing. Shame is, I am bad.
Yeah.
So someone who is shame-filled, which he was before any of this ever began.
Yeah, true.
So he has guilt and he has shame. And, think about any time you have a big thing in your life coming up that feels like the biggest thing ever. Don't you lie in your... Well, I'm sure neurotypical people don't do this. But us neurospicy folk lie in bed and do this cyclical thinking of, I did the right,
over.
I did the wrong, I did the right, I did the wrong, I'm bad, I'm good, I'm bad. Like, we do that. And that's why I don't sleep before I travel, or I don't sleep before a show, or I don't sleep,
whatever it is.
It's all this. And so either Shakespeare understood shame and what it does to the anxious soul.
Yeah.
Or he himself was riddled with anxiety and knew what that feeling was, that cyclical thing that we do.
Self-doubt.
I think he wrote it. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So much self-doubt and so much, self-blame. And yet, the other side of why am I scared of myself? I love myself. And then he's like, no, I hate myself. And so many times the word myself, I think it's in there 10 times. Who am I? There's
right.
almost that pulling apart of
Well, that's a person filled with That's a person filled with shame.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah, and he's like, would I revenge upon my own self? No, because I love myself. But why do I love myself? Have I ever done anything good for myself? No. You know, oh my God. And then this, I am a villain. But then I lie, I'm not. And then he's like, hey, I should say nice things about myself. But no, I shouldn't flatter myself because I have nothing good to say about myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And every several tongue brings in a several tale. So several meaning going in different directions. All of these stories don't agree.
But
perjury,
also,
I have lied, I have murdered.
Yeah.
And all of these things are coming flooding at me, saying guilty, guilty, guilty. I shall despair. And there's the word that they all said to him, despair and to die.
But I think his heart, and I've said this about him all along. I mean, I think his heart is broken and it has been broken. And all he was trying to do was to be seen and loved. And he went about it the wrong way. But he tried going about it the right way, and they still didn't see him and love him.
Yeah.
So how could he ever see himself and love himself if all the people around him don't see him and don't love him? That
and
shame.
And here he's like trying to be his own mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And he is like attacking himself in the way that they do. I shall despair. There's no creature loves me. I always like, oh, little Richard. It sounds like his little inner child. You know?
Right. But he's right. Even if he had died at Tewkesbury,
they would have given him a funeral,
but they wouldn't have been moved.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Richard, he died for the good of the family. But, like,
right.
They wouldn't have been moved.
Yeah, there wouldn't have been memorials written for him and stuff.
Right,
because he was deformed. And that's, you know, ultimately his greatest sin was something he had no control over.
Oh, well,
right?
That's a soapbox right there.
Yeah.
Is it not? I'm not going to do it, but I do want every one of us to think about that. There are things.
We make snap judgments about people all the time.
All the time.
And then it's like they have to do all the work of scrambling back into the good graces. When it's like, wait a minute, that was put on them.
Right.
And they had no control of what they look like, and you're deciding who they are based on their outside.
Diana doing a soapbox. It's not Aaron.
Dang.
Look at that.
What?
That's excellent. I love that.
Yeah.
Yep.
He never would have overcome that.
And he knows
that's
it.
Why I love him. He's
yep.
my little sad broken baby.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going down this interesting place, this interesting road. So, yeah. I mean, I love this speech too. You know, I'm interested that editors don't think, but I always think like it is one more chance for you to kind of see his world from his side, you know, after all things, after seeing all the people he killed. Even so, like, just remember, this is why he is the way he is. Yeah, so he's in his tent screaming away, and Ratcliffe comes in. He's like, what's wrong with you, man? Ratcliffe, my lord! Richard, Suits, who's there? Ratcliffe, my lord, 'tis I. The early village cock hath twice done salutation to the morn. Your friends are up and buckle on their armor. We got the cock again.
And he got hard twice. Boom, boom.
Yep. Boom, boom.
Of course, it's the rooster. It crowed twice.
The rooster crowed twice. But, you know, I had morning wood. I've already jacked off. And
yeah,
what are you doing? You're not in your armor. You got to get in your armor, man. Got to go choke the bishop once before the battle, because who knows when you get another chance.
That's right. Oh, God.
Oh, God. Okay, Richard. Oh, Ratcliffe, I have dreamed a fearful dream. What thinkst thou? Will our friends prove all true? Here we go. Dream, dream. Right?
Two.
Something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Something big. Something's coming. Something. It's not West Side Story. Okay.
No.
Ratcliffe. No doubt, my lord. Richard. Oh, Ratcliffe, I fear, I fear. Ratcliffe. Nay, my good, my lord, be not afraid of shadows. Wonderful word there. So he's reminding you, if anybody
actors.
Out there in the audience is afraid of those ghosts, just remember, they were actors.
Right.
It's okay.
Yeah.
And then Richard, with his favorite saint, once again, by the Apostle Paul, shadows tonight have struck more terror to the soul of Richard than can the substance of 10,000 soldiers armed in proof and led by shallow Richmond. It is not yet near day. Come, go with me. Under our tents, I'll play the eavesdropper to see if any mean to shrink from me. So he's going to go sneaking around the tents to listen to their conversations and see if anybody's defecting. He's very paranoid. He's very uncertain.
Well, he has reason to be paranoid. Even the servants aren't treating him like a king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Armed in proof. Proof just means in impenetrable armor. So he's like, 10,000 soldiers could stand in front of me in something I can't even cut through, and I'm not as scared of them as I'm scared of the thing that I just saw in my sleep. Aww. So it says exeunt. And many editions think that the scene continues as it has been through the other exeunts, but we're going to stop it here, actually, so that we can give you the battle. And the horse, notice, by the way, when he woke up, what did he call for? Give me a horse.
His horse.
And that's his famous line,
mm-hmm.
right? My kingdom for a horse, that's coming up.
Right. And you know what? Can I just say, I never really thought about that line until right now. I mean, obviously, I know that line. Everybody knows that line. But
yeah.
I never really thought about what he's saying. I would stop being king if I could just get the fuck out of here. If I could just escape, I would give you everything. I would give it all.
You know what?
I live take it. And get out.
I take it as so he's been struck down from his horse, right?
Mm-hmm.
I take it as, if you give me a fucking horse, I will go and kill some more people. That's what I always took it as. Like,
oh.
If I can get, because Richard
I think that's
is,
what I thought, too.
Yeah. Richard but, unseated is much smaller and debilitated.
But that's
than
what
he
I'm
is
saying.
On horseback.
That's what I'm saying. I always thought the same thing. Give me a horse so I can go continue to fight. I don't think that's what he's saying. I think what he's saying is, dear God, give me a horse and I will give you my kingdom. Like, I'm getting out of here. I don't want to be king. My kingdom for a horse? I don't want to be king.
I don't want to be king.
I want to live.
True.
I never thought
or
about that
or continue fighting. But I would give you, I'll give you everything for just a horse.
Yeah.
I don't care. It doesn't mean anything to me. I don't care.
Right.
Yeah. Either way, whatever the interpretation is, He wants to give it all up just for a horse.
Right.
Because horseback, he's a different person than he is certainly in the battle. On horseback,
right.
which was a
and
status
And I think that's
thing.
The way
you
I've
know,
always
like,
seen it.
Infantrymen
That's the way I've
don't,
always seen it.
Right.
But why would he say my kingdom for a horse? Why would he, what if he, I mean, this is really next week's episode, but if he intended to go on fighting and make himself big again, wouldn't he just say, bring me a horse?
Yeah. Well, whether he's fighting to win or fighting to fight his way out of it, he needs the horse.
Yeah, but my kingdom,
right?
I'm giving up everything just for a horse.
Yeah.
Why would I do that? Anyway, I just never heard those lines like that before.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. All done.
I know. Okay, we're done with Richard. No, we're not. There's more to come. There's the last bit. There's orations to the army.
Yes, of course.
and all kinds of things.
There always are. Yeah. All right. Well, this is Fuck Shakespeare.
Yeah. And this was Fuck the Ghosts for scaring my boy. Fuck them.
Fuck ghosts.
No, I know. That would be, there would be ectoplasm and all kinds of.
Messy.
Yeah. An ectoplasm orgasm.
That ought to be the title of the show. I'm sorry.
This episode, go for it. Do it.
Yeah.
Ectoplasm orgasm.
I got it. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. You have to make it to the end to figure out why.
Why we said that.
Okay.
Oh,
excellent.
That's a good discovery. And I'm Diana. And we'll just keep them coming.
Yep.
So to speak.
Keep them coming.
Oh, dear.
Bye.
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.